Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation with several great presidents, and then several presidents who were absolutely abject failures, who were miserable, incompetent, and pathetic. That's the subject of this very special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. The belief is that we can learn perhaps even more by looking at presidents to avoid than we can by looking at presidents to emulate. What we need to focus on is what voters can do to avoid future presidents who will be as inept, showing the bad judgment, and sometimes even the bad character, the self-destructive impulses of the worst presidents ever. The subject of this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. There are common elements in all of America's least successful presidents, and we will draw the connections. This is important because in most elections, very much including the election of 2012 between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, people are more likely to vote against the guy that they fear most than to vote for somebody who inspires them. And there are certain characteristics that are very consistent that Americans ought to fear and ought to avoid. And the worst presidents have displayed those characteristics very consistently. Let's go back to the story of Andrew Johnson, who would have to be on the list of, and high on the list of, any of the worst presidents that we've had. Not because he was a bad man, he wasn't. He was a good man, a man who took himself very seriously, tried to take his responsibilities and his duties very seriously, and he showed great courage as well. He showed courage when he was the only Southern senator to stay at his desk when his state seceded, his state being Tennessee. And yes, he greatly admired Abraham Lincoln. And Lincoln was actually one of the few people who was willing to excuse Andrew Johnson after his disastrous inauguration. His inauguration, he had had three glasses of brandy before he was sworn in by the prior vice president, the guy he had replaced. And Lincoln said, "I have known Andy Johnson for many years. He made a bad slip the other day, but she need not be scared. Andy ain't a drunkard." And he probably wasn't, despite the fact that he and particularly his three doomed sons had a strong taste for alcohol, particularly the very intense kind of alcohol that was well known as moonshine. Johnson was in trouble from the moment he became president. First of all, he was a Democrat, lifelong Democrat, who had been nominated to be part of the Republican ticket, which had been rechristened, renamed the National Union Party ticket for the sake of politics. And secondly, he had no independent power base at all. His state that he had represented in the U.S. Senate had not even been readmitted to the Union. And here he is, left to the best of his ability to put forward Abraham Lincoln's policies. And one aspect of Abraham Lincoln's policies Johnson believed he needed to defend was the idea that the South would very soon be reincorporated into the Union. And he waited till Congress was out of session because he knew he didn't have support there. And scarcely a month after Lincoln's assassination, Johnson proclaimed a national amnesty for former rebels and announced his own plans of Reconstruction. The Senate and the House were enraged, just enraged that he had presumed to do that, and were extremely angry about it. They immediately passed another bill. And the bill today, it looks so innocuous and so appropriate. They had passed a bill calling for the protection by the American military of the newly freed slaves. to protect them militarily, if necessary, from any efforts to take away their basic rights that they had just earned. Johnson vetoed that bill. And then he went and spoke at an impromptu rally at the White House 3 days after the veto, and he actually made the mistake of denouncing his congressional opponents, and this is just weeks after he became president, denouncing them as traitors. After the massive treason of the Civil War, you don't do that. He named particularly Thaddeus Stevens, the same character so memorably played by Tommy Lee Jones in the movie Lincoln, and Charles Sumner, the proud senator from Massachusetts. And Johnson said, "Does not the blood of Lincoln appease the vengeance and wrath of the opponents of this government?" Already recognizing that the members of his own party, or the party that had elected him, were his opponents, things went downhill from there. He was completely opposed to the concern for civil rights that animated what were called the Radical Republicans. There was some question, there have been 4 million Americans who had been freed by the Civil War. What's going to happen with them? And Johnson took almost entirely the side of the white Southerners. That's one of the reasons, by the way, that very, very often, until quite recently, he was overrated by historians, because people sympathized with his battle with a Congress that was much more concerned about the freed slaves than about a speedy reconstruction of the Union. And historians can argue about that, but you can't argue about Johnson's incompetence. He challenged his opponents, and he engaged in what was called a swing around the circle. When it came time for the midterm election, he had no support in the Republican Party. He campaigned for a Johnson ticket, and basically for people, particularly Democrats, the opposite party, who would come into Congress and give the president some support with his view of Reconstruction. But in the midterm elections, the elections of 1866, he got wiped out. First of all, the Republicans sent hecklers. He would always engage hecklers and lose his temper. He was an effective stump speaker, but he was very easily distracted, and he didn't deal well with opposition. And what happened was the Republicans and the radical Republicans, who were deeply opposed to Johnson, won two-thirds of both houses of Congress. And they used that power to pass a very dubious piece of legislation called the Tenure of Office Act. What that said was that the President of the United States could not fire any sitting cabinet member without the approval of the Senate. That anyone whose appointment had won the approval, the advice and consent of the Senate, could not be fired again without, again, the advice and consent of the Senate. That was meant to protect the Secretary of War, who was an ally of the Republicans in Congress, Edwin McMaster Stanton. And Johnson proceeded to fire him, knowing that this would provoke a constitutional confrontation. And Johnson, at the time that he fired Stanton, actually appointed U.S. Grant, the popular hero, of course, of the Civil War, to be the new Secretary of War. There was only one problem. Grant didn't like the president, and he himself was much more allied with the others, and he refused to come and take the office. He just refused. And then Johnson attacked Grant, attacking the most admired man in America. And it was quite mad. Grant issued a statement. He wrote to President Johnson. He said, "Now, Mr. President, when my honor as a soldier and integrity as a man have been so violently assailed, pardon me for saying that I can but regard this whole matter from beginning to end as an attempt to involve me in the resistance of law for which you hesitated to assume the responsibility and thus destroy my character before the country." It was over this that Johnson was impeached. The entire impeachment was to some extent meaningless. It was important constitutionally, but it occurred in the last year of Johnson's presidency. He was about to leave the presidency anyway. And the thing was far, far closer when it came to trial than it was for Bill Clinton. You may remember that Clinton easily beat removal from office. Johnson beat it by one vote. He needed 7 Republicans. It was so lopsidedly Republican, the Senate. He needed 7 Republicans to cross over. 6 of them had. He had one last vote. It was Edwin Ross of Kansas. He survived impeachment, but not disgrace. And when Grant was inaugurated, Johnson refused to even show up. It was extraordinary.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. For a complete list of history shows, visit MedvedHistoryStore.com.
He's called capitalism the greatest thing humanity ever accomplished, and he warns that socialism is trickle-up poverty. He's internationally acclaimed Whole Foods CEO and free market champion, John Mackey, the keynote speaker at this year's Washington Policy Center annual dinner in Bellevue with the Hyatt Regency. Yup, in person in Bellevue with the Hyatt Regency on October 1st. Tickets and information, WPCDinner.com. That's WPCDinner.com. Is our country's distinctive power and prosperity the product of some happy accidents or criminal activity, or is it God's hand on America? That's the title, actually, of my most recent book. You can get a hardcover copy, personally signed by me, together with a full audiobook, and it comes to you together with an MP3 player so you can hear it anytime you want. It's all at a reduced price while supplies last. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for God's Hand on America, look for that audiobook and hardcover book bundle. Small investors shamed Wall Street by running the price of certain stocks way up to the detriment of big hedge funds, social media, and trading platforms, then kept investors from buying stock. A financial war is being waged in America. With all this volatility, now's an even better time to protect your net worth and own precious metals as part of your portfolio. Nick Rovich, who's the owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, has always been fair and honest with my precious metals holdings, and now, more than ever, it's a good time to own tangible assets like gold, silver, and platinum. AmFed can show you smart choices, which have been proven winners time and time again. Call Nick and his team at AmFed today, 800-221-7694. That's 800-221-7694, or visit AmericanFederal.com.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. That's 800-985-1610.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, simulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
To purchase this special show, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
This special broadcast of a history program that I believe is one of the most important that we've ever done. It's about the worst presidents ever. And why is it so important? Because voters need to know what characteristics, what tendencies, what aspects of a presidential candidate that they should avoid at all costs. And one way of concentrating on that would be to look at the example of Andrew Johnson, whose presidency was a complete wreckage. And worse than that, it helped to lead to all of the crimes and disappointments and heartbreak of the Reconstruction era that followed the tragedy and heroism of the Civil War itself with all sorts of unnecessary disasters. Johnson left in disgrace from the White House. Again, he did not even attend his own inauguration. Grant, because of his fury at Johnson having tried to use Grant's name during the time he was struggling over the Tenure of Office Act and firing the Secretary of War, Grant said he didn't want to ride in the same carriage as Andrew Johnson. And so Johnson said, okay, I won't show up at the inaugural at all. It's unprecedented not to show up at the inauguration of your successor. It's really too bad. The Republicans had run with the following platform. Their platform said at the beginning, "We profoundly deplore the untimely and tragic death of Abraham Lincoln and regret the accession to the presidency of Andrew Johnson, who has acted treacherously to the people who elected him and the cause he was pledged to support." They then say that Johnson was justly impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors and properly pronounced guilty thereof by the vote of 35 senators. That's right, 35 senators have found him guilty. Just 19 had found him not guilty, but that was short, one vote short of the two-thirds they needed to drive him from office. 6 years after leaving office, the Republicans, of course, with that platform, won in a huge landslide with Grant. But 6 years after being driven from office, Johnson was elected to the Senate from Tennessee. He's the only former president who came back to the Senate. And he did so largely because he was able to get the Tennessee legislature to send him there. These are the days before direct election of the Senate. And he came in because many of the senators who were still there were the same people who had voted to drive him from office. And he came in an old man. He only served for a year before illness and ultimately death took him. But a tragic figure, but a wretched president. The question becomes, why am I not including U.S. Grant, who was Johnson's successor, as one of the worst presidents ever? As a matter of fact, Grant is a fascinating figure who helps to focus what it is that classifies someone as one of the worst presidents ever. Because Grant has been making a huge surge in terms of historical estimation. There's a new biography, and a good one, about Grant by H.W. Brands that views him as one of the great presidents. In fact, in one of the most recent presidential ratings books, there's a book called The Leaders We Deserved and A Few We Didn't by a former presidential aide named Alvin Felsenburgh. And Felsenburgh actually has his own chart at the back where he rates the president. He rates Grant seventh best as a near great. And so Grant has made a huge comeback, and that largely has to do with Grant's support for equal rights, for the amendments guaranteeing rights to freed slaves, and some of Grant's achievements in foreign and, yes, even economic policy. Why did so many of the previous presidential polls, the first presidential poll in 1948 that we talked about rating all the presidents, rated Grant second from the bottom, along with Warren G. Harding? Why do neither of them deserve to be on lists of worst presidents when their presidencies were so scandal-tainted? First of all, unlike Richard Nixon, they were not personally implicated in these scandals in any way. Secondly, they both left office. Harding died in office. Grant left office still a national hero. In fact, Grant could have come back for a third term and almost did in 1880, 4 years after he left the presidency of the United States. Grant remained universally popular. And this makes all the difference. First of all, scandal happens. I think that the Grant scandals and the Harding scandals were sort of old-line economic scandals and old-line corruption scandals involving members of the administration. And no, it's not good for any president. But in terms of appointments, generally, Grant made very distinguished appointments, certainly of his Secretary of State, Hamilton Fish. So did Harding. Harding appointed a great Secretary of State, Charles Evans Hughes. He appointed also a fine Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, former President Taft. And Harding handled the recession of 1921 expertly and got us out of that recession, didn't plunge us into depression. In any event, both men, much more to the point, ended the presidency as deeply, deeply popular. One of the characteristics of the truly worst presidents is that they are rejected by the public, because ultimately, historians know less about a president's performance than the people who've actually lived through it. And when people who have lived through a presidency, for instance, for Harding, when he died in 1923 in the middle of his term and was succeeded by Coolidge, Coolidge won a resounding election for a term of his own. He was very, very popular. Harding was still popular, still revered by most Americans. And people turned out for Harding's funeral in the same manner they turned out for Lincoln's. They were very popular. The presidents we're talking about, beginning, of course, with John Tyler, going to Franklin Pierce, going to James Buchanan, going to Andrew Johnson, had all been deeply, deeply unpopular. And the same is true of the two 20th century presidents that must be included. One of them was Jimmy Carter. You knew that I was going there. Anyone who listens to the radio show knows how I feel about President Carter. When President Carter ran for re-election, he carried 6 states. He lost 44 states. It is stunning. He got barely 40% of the vote running for re-election. He is deeply, deeply unpopular. And among the reasons that he was so unpopular was that he fulfilled the 2 essential criteria, aside from rejection by the public, that qualify a president as one of the worst. Number 1, breaking promises with the American people. All of the least successful presidents have broken fundamental promises, pledges that they made to the American people. And number 2, he was a gloomy Gus. He was unhappy in the White House. He was a self-righteous sufferer. How self-righteous? Well, comparable to Herbert Hoover, the other 20th century president who has to be included on this list. These were guys who thought that the worse they felt, the more painful the presidency was for them, the greater they were. We'll be right back to explain how that works and why it should be avoided at all costs.
Yes, the pandemic is coming to an end. Restrictions are coming to an end. But body aches and pains never seem to end. That's why you need to click sunny-bay.com for the best sleep you can get. Sunny Bay's legendary products can help, like our lavender stress-reducing products, locally sourced and handmade in the USA. Or try Sunny Bay's award-winning pillows for traveling or extra neck support while sleeping. No need for pills or expensive chiropractic visits. Our neck support pillows are that good. Sunny Bay is a homegrown small business, but our products are designed and rigorously tested based on your demand and feedback. And they make great gifts for mom, dad, or anyone. Find Sunny Bay products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, or at sunny-bay.com. And right now, get free heat patches and a belt with any purchase. So remember, Sunny Bay heating pads, neck pillows, and stress-relieving hot or cold wraps. As restrictions come to an end and you get back to work, do it the healthy way with Sunny Bay.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
New York and New Jersey will get federal aid to help in the aftermath of Hurricane Ida. That's because President Biden is signing off on disaster declarations for both states. New York Governor Kathy Hochul saying this means folks impacted by the storm are eligible for federal funds. This includes housing assistance, crisis counseling, unemployment, home repairs, and legal services. Biden also set to visit both states tomorrow. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken is in Qatar to discuss evacuation efforts in Afghanistan following the U.S. withdrawal. Blinken meeting with senior officials after arriving in Qatar's capital of Doha today. Blinken also set to visit with Afghan refugees in Germany this week. This is USA Radio News.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com. Keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Purchase this special show. Go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
The Depression era smash hit, Let's Have Another Cup of Coffee, Let's Have Another Piece of Pie. The point of the song is that, well, things have to get better because they're so terrible. The song also has a lyric in it that makes fun of President Hoover, who was the president, of course, at the onset of the Great Depression. Most of the time period of the Great Depression, Franklin D. Roosevelt was president, but he responded very differently emotionally, even if he responded similarly in terms of policy. The lyric in the song says, Mr. Herbert Hoover says, now's the time to buy. Hoover, of course, was noted for saying prosperity is just around the corner, which he didn't really say exactly. But what's fascinating about all of this is that Hoover was the wrong man in the wrong place at the wrong time, precisely because of temperament. He was a gloomy guy. And Roosevelt was exactly the opposite. Roosevelt was like Reagan. Even though Roosevelt was in a wheelchair, he was a sunny and amiable and upbeat, and the country needed that. Even when Reagan had a bullet in his chest in 1981, he was sunny and amiable and positive. That's something you look for in a president of the United States. This special broadcast about the worst presidents ever, of course it has to include Herbert Hoover. Not because Hoover did nothing in the face of the stock market crash. He didn't bring on the stock market crash. It happened in October of his first year of office. He'd only been president for about 6 months. He wasn't responsible for it. But he was responsible for overreacting to it and disastrous decisions involving the country. A lot of people don't recognize the fact that Roosevelt's biggest mistakes were following the path that had been blazed by Herbert Hoover disastrously. In the middle of the Depression, he increased corporate taxes, raised them. And in the middle of the Depression, he raised the top tax bracket from 25% to 63%. You think that worked? Right. It worked just about as well then as it would now. I mean, even President Obama would only raise the top tax bracket back to what it was under. 63% Hoover did. And plus, he signed a huge increase in the tariffs. And his policies helped to prolong the Depression. But worse than that, his personality grated on the American public in the midst of these hugely hard times. Just to give you some sample of what the White House was like under Hoover. Hoover was a great man. He was great before the presidency. He was great after the presidency. He was involved with relief efforts after World War I and after World War II. But as president, and with the nation suffering, William Allen White, the great Kansas editor, came and visited him in the White House. And he said, Hoover is constitutionally gloomy, a congenital pessimist who always saw the doleful side of any situation. The Secretary of State, Henry Stimson, later became Secretary of War under Roosevelt. Stimson said that a meeting with Hoover is like sitting in a bath of ink. And Ray Moley, who was a speechwriter for President Roosevelt later, saw the president in 1932, and he reported, "He seems to me to be close to death. He had the look of being done, but still of going on and on, driven by some damned duty." That's the kind of personality you want to avoid. It's the kind of personality who, at a time of massive national hardship, and people suffering and struggling and not having enough to pay the bills and having to wait in line for gas, we're talking Jimmy Carter. And toward the end of his administration, Jimmy Carter asked for time for all the networks for a half-hour speech from the White House in which he told the American people, basically, it's all your fault.
Too many of us now tend to worship self-indulgence and consumption. Human identity is no longer defined by what one does, but by what one owns. But we've discovered that owning things and consuming things does not satisfy our longing for meaning. We've learned that piling up material goods cannot fill the emptiness of lives which have no confidence or purpose. The symptoms of this crisis of the American spirit are all around us.
Okay, when a president talks to you about a crisis of the American spirit and talks about piling up things at a time when there is tremendous unemployment, tremendous inflation, and great suffering, no wonder the speech became known as the malaise speech, and that people look back on the whole Carter administration as a malaise. What are the lessons? And what about Wilson and the other Johnson? We'll get to that and more in this special broadcast, The Worst Presidents Ever. Whatever the controversies, whatever the surprises in the world around us at the moment, it's important to get some perspective, and no better source of perspective than the history of this great country. At MedvedHistoryStore.com, check out some of the titles we have on offer about the Constitution, about the origins of our tax system, about the history of third parties, about the question of whether America really is a Christian or is it a secular nation. There's a trick answer to that trick question. Enrich your understanding and appreciation with CDs and MP3 downloads at MedvedHistoryStore.com.
To purchase this special show, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
It's tough to blame Jimmy Carter for the plague of disco music that engulfed the nation in a disco inferno. That's the name of this indelible classic by the Tramps during the Carter presidency. Yeah, it was burning everywhere. This song actually came out before President Carter even became president. It was during his successful campaign against Gerald Ford. But you certainly can blame Jimmy Carter for the malaise that was communicated by his speech of July 1979 about a year before he faced renomination. He barely survived a nomination fight against Ted Kennedy, and this is after Chappaquiddick, of course, and then lost in a crushing landslide against President Reagan. Reagan providing, just as Roosevelt provided, a tremendous contrast with Hoover, and Roosevelt being cheerful and upbeat and amiable and sunny against Hoover's gloominess, so too Reagan provided the same kind of contrast against President Carter, and both Carter and Hoover got completely obliterated at the polls. Here's the amazing thing. When Hoover ran for re-election in 1932 after his one disastrous term, he carried only six states out of 48. He lost 42 states. By the time Carter ran for re-election in 1980, we had expanded the Union, of course, with Alaska and Hawaii. We then had 50 states. Carter still only carried six states. He lost 44 states. That kind of rejection is what we're looking for. That's why it is wrong to talk about, oh, people like Ulysses S. Grant or Warren Harding, both of whom left office highly popular and remained in very high regard by the public, to talk about them among the worst presidents. It's also the kind of thing that gets James Madison off the hook. Now, James Madison generally is perhaps the most overrated president because he was such a great statesman, father of the Constitution, one of the constitutional fathers, and he was a two-term president, and he was a great friend of Jefferson's. But look, all you have to do when you talk about Madison and having a very difficult, troubled term is he got us unnecessarily involved in a disastrous war, and under his watch, the White House burned to the ground. I mean, this is not good. This doesn't look good on anyone's resume. Remember, his wife Dolly had to cut off the out of its frame the portrait of George Washington, or the British would have burned that too.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. For a complete list of history shows, visit MedvedHistoryStore.com.
Even for Americans who've been successful in dodging the coronavirus so far, there's still a problem of pain. There are 100 million Americans who suffer from ongoing pain due to overexertion or exercise or just aging or the effects of everyday living, and Relief Factor can help. It helps exercise-related pain or general muscle aches and pains, and it certainly does for me. There are four key ingredients. Each one approaches the body's natural anti-inflammatory response function from different metabolic pathways. The 3-week quick start can show you how it works. It's just $19.95, 95 cents a day, less than a cup of coffee a day, much less for pain relief. Try Relief Factor. It has worked wonderfully for literally hundreds of thousands, and certainly for me. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, and order your own quick start. Nothing to lose but your pain. The whole world to gain. Okay, how crucial are faith and freedom really to America? Ronald Reagan called faith and freedom the twin beacons that brighten the American sky. What did Reagan mean? Well, you can find out at the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College, which has just launched a new course on the legacy of Ronald Reagan. This is very important because the course is posted online at the Institute's website, faithandfreedom.com. The course is led by Reagan biographer and expert Dr. Paul Kangor, frequent guest on my show. And the course includes Professor Kangor's one-on-one interviews with the likes of Bill Bennett, Ed Meese, Peter Robinson, Michael Reagan, and more. It's a remarkable offer that you will truly not find anywhere else, and it's free. Yeah, it's actually free. While you're there at faithandfreedom.com, also check out the many articles and lectures on topics from freedom of conscience to critical race theory, from Madison and Lincoln to Churchill and Reagan. You can find all of this and much more on the website at the Institute for Faith and Freedom, faithandfreedom.com.
For over 20 years, Extendivite has been helping people. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. Glad I found this product. I am 51 years old and started getting headaches a couple of times a week. I went to the doctor and my blood pressure was a little high at around 150 over 95. I found out about Extendivite and I ordered some to try it. Immediately, I felt better, and it lowered my blood pressure, and my headaches went away almost instant. I have been taking it now for about 4 months, and I am so glad I found this product. You won't be disappointed. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. For a complete list of history shows, visit MedvedHistoryStore.com.
Madison, however, by the end of the war, the nation survived. There was a peace agreement with Britain. There was a famous victory at the very end of the war. Actually, it occurred after the war. We had already signed a peace treaty, but they hadn't gotten the news in New Orleans when General Jackson won that victory. So Madison left very popular. He escapes designation as among the worst. But Carter and Hoover had all three characteristics. Number one, they broke promises with the American people. Hoover had run on the slogan, a chicken in every pot, a car in every garage. This is when cars were still sort of sweeping the country. It's 1928 that he was elected. And he promised more of prosperity in boom times, which is what Coolidge had delivered and Harding had delivered. And no, we got a Great Depression. And Jimmy Carter also promised prosperity, and he promised a populist government and keeping faith with the American people. And a government as good as its people was his slogan. And the American people came to realize under Carter that there were worse things than Richard Nixon's sleaziness and dishonesty. What was worse? Ineptitude. I mean, unbelievable ineptitude in handling the Iran hostage crisis, in handling foreign policy, in handling domestic policy, in growing the government, two new government departments under Carter. Of course, his presidency was a disaster, and yes, he also had the second characteristic, in addition to broken promises, which is gloominess. And this is so consistent, because one of the things that incapacitates presidents and allows them to continue in policies that are disastrous is this idea of self-righteousness, holding to your guns, not making any concessions, not collaborating effectively with other people, being inflexible, and that goes together with gloominess. One of the visitors to the Pierce White House, and President Pierce very much had that characteristic, wrote that everything in that mansion seems cold and cheerless. I have seen hundreds of log cabins which seem to contain more happiness. Pierce, of course, had his invalid wife who was upstairs locked in the bedroom writing letters to their dead son. Tyler had a wife who died in office, totally isolated. Gloom is one of the characteristics. And third characteristic, public rejection. In terms of gloom and public rejection and broken promises, why not feature Woodrow Wilson and Lyndon Johnson? Broken promises? When Woodrow Wilson ran for re-election in 1916, it was a close race. Wilson ran on the slogan, he kept us out of war. A little bit more than a month later, we were in war, unnecessarily, World War I. Boy, is that a broken promise? I think so. Wilson also, when it comes to gloominess and inflexibility, He was incapacitated by a stroke, lying in bed in a dark room for the last part of his presidency, refusing to compromise at all, wrecking the Versailles Treaty and helping to set up World War II. I mean, World War I, World War II, this would be a pretty good qualifications for a terrible president. But you also have the question of the expansion of government under Woodrow Wilson. And yes, the income tax amendment, which was ratified under Woodrow Wilson, and the Federal Reserve and the direct election of senators and on and on. So why not Wilson among the very worst? It's a close run thing, but he was simply too politically skillful and had achieved too much. When someone sets out, at least in his first term, has a program and then implements it, it's tough to rank him as one of the very worst. Lyndon Johnson, by the way, would be a similar story. Johnson ran for his, in effect, was his second term. He had taken over in the last year for Kennedy. And then his second term, he ran saying, I seek no wider war. And then literally weeks later, we greatly expanded our role in Vietnam. But Johnson also had real achievements. And what about Richard Nixon? Only president ever to be forced into resignation. Why doesn't he qualify? And what should we watch out for in future presidents to avoid more of the worst presidents ever? That and more coming right up.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. The righteous goal of saving young black males from needless tragic deaths means focusing on more than criminal mistreatment by the police. Last year, fewer than 100 unarmed black victims perished in encounters with cops, but more than 100 times as many died from drug overdoses. Cutting the rate of killings by law enforcement in half could save up to 50 black lives a year, but cutting drug deaths could save more than 5,000. Moreover, substance abuse contributes to multiple forms of misery for African-American families and also plays a role in fatal encounters with police. The late George Floyd battled addiction for the last 20 years of his life, and at the time of his cruel killing by Minneapolis cops, the autopsy showed methamphetamines, fentanyl, morphine, and cannabis in his system. Yes, all black lives matter and must be spared from the ravages of a pandemic of deadly drugs. I'm Michael Medved.
Listeners love Michael Medved.
I love your show. It is a thinking man show. Your competition often speaks from talking points over and over and over, and does not allow for the opposition. You invite the opposition, and I appreciate that.
You are the host I probably disagree with the most, but one of the best that I love to listen to because you tell it like it is, like you see it, and you let other people have an argument with you.
The Michael Medved Show.
When it comes to the worst presidents ever, there is broad consensus among a lot of historians. I actually find myself in substantial agreement with a book that was done about 10 years ago by a guy named Alvin Felsenberg. It's called The Leaders We Deserved and A Few We Didn't. He does his own evaluation, not just about general. He evaluates people in various categories, character, vision, competence, etc. His bottom of the barrel, his utter failures, starting from the very bottom, he rates Buchanan, worst, Andrew Johnson, Pierce. He puts in Nixon, Hoover, Tyler. He rates Jimmy Carter just two notches above. So I would rate Nixon not as badly as he does, and I would rate Carter worse, but we're in pretty much agreement there. Why not Nixon? Nixon, when he resigned, it was a great act of statesmanship and vision, and frankly, sacrifice. He could have fought the thing, probably would have lost, but Andrew Johnson did. Bill Clinton obviously fought impeachment. Most people would say he was right to fight impeachment. But Nixon also had great foreign policy achievements and helped substantially to win the Cold War. So what about our current incumbent? Too early to tell. I mean, he still might wreck his presidency, but it's very hard to say that any two-term president, anyone who is able to get himself reelected, deserves to be counted among the very worst. And Barack Obama basically did achieve most of his first-term agenda. And for George Walker Bush, I know that liberals love to say, oh, he was the worst president ever. Let me cite a liberal expert, Arthur Schlesinger, who was an aide to President Kennedy. It was his father who initiated this whole presidential polls, rating people, presidents, and where they stood. He said this, he wrote this, and he said, still, even in the absence of first-order crisis, forceful and persuasive presidents, Jefferson, Jackson, James K. Polk, Theodore Roosevelt, Harry Truman, John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and George W. Bush are able to impose their own priorities on the country. Yes, President Bush did. President Obama just ratified his tax reforms for 98% of the American people. He also rallied the country after September 11th, and his rescue of the Iraq situation with the surge and his rescue of financial collapse with the Troubled Asset Relief Program, I think, qualify him very positively, not as one of the worst ever. What do we watch out for? Felsenberg, in his book, which is together with another book by Robert Merry called Where They Stand, is a fascinating book on this whole general subject. He has a number of things to watch out for, and it's good advice. Stay away from whiners, he writes. Keep away from know-it-alls. And, yes, stand guard against bearers of grudges. Avoid people who are likely to be promise breakers. And avoid people who are gloomy gusses. We believe in optimism, a positive view, and constantly upward and onward for this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Thanks for listening to the Special History Broadcast. If you want even more content from Michael Medved, go to our website, michaelmedved.com, and consider becoming a Medhead. There's so much content available. The 3-hour daily broadcast, commercial-free, hundreds of commentaries, 2 new podcasts, and lots more. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead subscription and become a member.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you could donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-785-9618. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now, 1-800-785-9618. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-785-9618. That's 1-800-785-9618.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
You've been hearing Dr. Wallach talking about 90 essential nutrients, keeping the body healthy. GCNteam.com now has Beyond Tangy Tangerine Tablets, 60 plant-derived minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, packed in a powerful tablet. But that's not it. 160,000 auric points, a knockout punch to free radicals. Call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com. That's 877-878-4203.